From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak on this very first Monday in April. California Senator Dianne Feinstein has made a decision about Neil Gorsuch, and the first vote on the president's Supreme Court nominee will be sometime today. We'll keep you posted if that vote happens during my conversation with Ken Rudin or during this hour. Over the weekend, you might know the president okayed emergency funding toward repairs of the Oroville spillways. The political junkie Ken Rudin is standing by, and he joins us today to talk through all the political news. Hi, Ken. Good to have you back on the program.
Good morning, Beth, and welcome home.
Thank you. And thanks to the folks who stepped in with me during the last 2 weeks. It was great that I could head back to Minnesota and help family out a little bit. So let's start, Ken, with the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee taking this first step and the decision from Dianne Feinstein. Will you explain why she said she had been undecided about Neil Gorsuch?
Well, I listened to her speech or listened to her little comments on the committee hearing this morning, and I honestly, God, don't think she was undecided at all. She was not. She was certainly undeclared, and she didn't announce her decision. But when she listed all the things that she didn't like about the votes that he took, the decisions he made that countered her own philosophy, it doesn't sound like she was undecided for a second. But maybe perhaps because she's the ranking Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee, maybe she felt that she should give the nominee some sense of fairness. But it sounds like her mind was made up long before this.
We have a bit of her comment this morning. Let's listen to it now.
As I've said, our job is to assess whether the nominee will protect the legal and constitutional rights of all Americans, and whether the nominee recognizes the humanity and justice required when evaluating the cases before him. Unfortunately, based on Judge Gorsuch's record at the Department of Justice, his tenure on the bench, his appearance before the Senate, and his written questions for the record, I cannot support this nomination.
So California Senator Dianne Feinstein becomes a no. She joins California's other senator, Kamala Harris, as a no as well. And technically, that means the count, Ken, for Democrats to stave off a filibuster. Well, you take it from there. Let's talk about the count.
Well, okay, so basically, the Democrats announced, Chuck Schumer announced a week or so ago that the Democrats will filibuster the nomination. That means to stop the filibuster, you need cloture. And cloture right now is 3/5 of the votes of the Senate. Thus, to stop the filibuster, you need 60 votes in favor of the nomination. Right now, you have all 52 Republicans. That's been clear from the beginning. You also have the votes of three Democrats: Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, and Joe Donnelly of Indiana. All three, interestingly enough, are up for re-election next year. All three are from states that heavily went for Donald Trump in 2016. So that's 55. You need five more Democrats to vote in favor of Gorsuch, or at least to vote for cloture, to stop the filibuster. I don't think they're going to get it. Maybe they can get one or two more. Maybe Angus King, the independent from Maine, is hinting he might vote for cloture. Michael Bennett from Colorado. I think the only reason he's hemming and hawing is because he comes from Judge Gorsuch's home state of Colorado and maybe showing some respect. But I don't think the Democrats, I don't think the Republicans can stop this filibuster. And so what Mitch McConnell is threatening to do and will probably do if they can't break the filibuster is change the rules, and that is employ the so-called nuclear option, which would thus require a majority vote to change the rules and thus confirm Judge Gorsuch, not by 60 votes, which is 3/5 of the Senate, but only by a simple majority, and that they have. Democrats say that'll blow up the rules of the Senate. Republicans will point to 2013, when Harry Reid of Nevada, then the Senate Majority Leader, changed the filibuster rules when it came to lower court nominations and cabinet nominations. Mitch McConnell says, well, we're just going to take it one step further and now include it for Supreme Court nominations.
So this nuclear option changes the Senate's filibuster rules. It prompted some interesting sound bites over the weekend. Do you change the rules or do you change the nominee? And of course, that gets into the partisanship here. But I will share with everybody that we recently talked about this on Insight with John Sims, a constitutional law professor at McGeorge Law School. And if you're unsure about this nuclear option, here's an explanation from John Sims.
Under the current situation, a Supreme Court nomination is subject to a filibuster in the Senate. And so, therefore, it would take 60 votes to close off the debate. There are only 52 Republicans. If the Democrats really get lined up to really oppose Gorsuch, they could probably do it. Now, what that might lead to, if they accomplished it, that the so-called nuclear option, which has already eliminated the filibuster for lower federal court judges, the rule could be changed to extend that to cover Supreme Court justices. And so then the next nominee, if the rules were changed, wouldn't be subject to a filibuster. Then the president would go and he would show us who's behind door number two. And it's entirely possible that the person behind door number two, judged from the Democrats' point of view, would be worse than Judge Gorsuch.
And that was from a conversation back in February. But it is interesting, Ken, to look at the strategy for how the decision about this nominee plays heavily and weighs heavily into what happens with potentially the next choice.
Well, that's the $64 question. And that's really what perhaps this is all about, because on paper, Judge Gorsuch would not be really ideologically changing the court because he would be replacing the late Justice Antonin Scalia, who died in 15 or 16. So therefore, I mean, it would be one conservative replacing another one. What Democrats are fearing and Republicans are expecting is if there would be a change in the court later in the Trump presidential term, let's just say it's Ruth Bader Ginsburg or even a moderate like Anthony Kennedy, Trump would most likely replace them or nominate somebody far more conservative than they, and that would change the ideological balance of the court.
And you're right. It was February in 2016 that Antonin Scalia passed away. I want to come back around to what's happening today, Ken. This U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee, let's talk about the makeup of the committee and what this first step is.
Okay, so it's the Senate Judiciary Committee. That's the one that the committee will vote to whether to send the nomination to the full Senate. It's 11 Republicans, it's 9 Democrats. All 11 Republicans are in favor of the nomination. So even if there are some Democrats who switches and maybe, I mean, people are waiting for perhaps Chris Coons of Delaware, that's not likely to happen. But let's just say, so the Senate Judiciary Committee will send to the nomination to the full Senate for a vote. Again, if the Democrats are successful with their filibuster, and that hasn't happened since 1968, when Republicans and Southern Democrats blocked Abe Fortas, which is Lyndon Johnson's choice for Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice, they blocked him in 68. So a Supreme Court Justice hasn't been blocked since then. Now, of course, Robert Bork was defeated since then, and so were other nominees. Richard Nixon had 2 Supreme Court justices rejected in 1969 and 1970, but that has nothing to do with the filibuster. But anyway, it goes to the full court. The Gorsuch nomination goes to the full court. If the Democrats continue to filibuster it, most likely, almost assuredly, Mitch McConnell will change the rules. And then by Friday, we expect that one way or the other, there will be a full vote to get Gorsuch on the court, and one way or the other, and I think this is a correct analysis, that one way or the other, Gorsuch does go on the court.
And that's, in fact, which the quote coming out of the weekend from Senator Mitch McConnell promising, he said, that Gorsuch will definitely be confirmed this week. Those were his words. So that vote could happen at any time now. The committee is meeting at this moment. When would the filibuster possibly begin?
Well, I think once it goes to the full court, then, of course, the Democrats are already ostensibly. I mean, once upon a time, you know, Jimmy Stewart would stand up and filibuster the Senate for hours, as he did in that fictitious movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. But there were real filibusters where senators like Strom Thurmond in 1957 stood up for 24 hours to filibuster a civil rights bill. Then he was a Democrat from South Carolina. So back in the day, they used to really hold on to the Senate by filibustering it. Now just the threat of a filibuster is what they call a filibuster. But anyway, between now and Friday, there will be votes in the Senate, probably closer to Thursday or Friday. If Gorsuch doesn't get 60 votes, and I don't think he does, then McConnell will go to the Senate and say, okay, I want to change the rules, like Harry Reid did back in 2013, and change the rules to allow a Supreme Court nominee to be confirmed by a simple majority, not a 60 vote plus. I should point out that Samuel Alito, the justice on the Supreme Court, when he was confirmed in 2006, his vote was only 58 to 42. There was no filibuster then, although, matter of fact, then-Senator Barack Obama was part of a filibuster effort, but it went nowhere. But in the more recent times, the last two George W. Bush nominees, the last two Barack Obama nominees, all had more than 60 votes, and Democrats insist the same standard should be held for Gorsuch.
A couple points to make. There are some senators who oppose Gorsuch's confirmation, but they don't necessarily endorse filibustering him, correct?
That is absolutely correct, and that'll be interesting to see whether Gorsuch does get the 60 votes, not because he'll get 60 votes on final confirmation, but Democrats who say that they're against changing the rules. But we'll see. There's tremendous pressure on Democrats, mostly from progressive organizations, from Chuck Schumer himself, but mostly from progressives who say, look, you know, remember what happened to Merrick Garland in 2016? He didn't get a vote, let alone a hearing, and we're not going to do the same nice thing for Judge Gorsuch. So it's a combination of ideology, party loyalty, and again, bristling over what happened to Merrick Garland in 2016.
And that's a question for you, Ken. How much do you think this is about this particular nominee, and how much is it politics and payback?
Well, a lot of times Supreme Court nominations and votes are about politics and payback. Certainly with payback with Merrick Garland, a lot of it is politics. But again, it's hard to, you know, I mean, they could complain about Gorsuch being a right winger all they want. The point is, they have the votes. They certainly have the votes for the majority. Mitch McConnell, who really likes to sell himself as a traditionalist, but he will definitely change the rules if he needs to. And as Mitch McConnell says, one way or the other, Neil Gorsuch gets on the court.
I'm talking with a political junkie, Ken Rudin. We speak every week. He joins us from Washington, D.C. Can we race through a couple of other topics that we could spend an hour on individually? But Jared Kushner is in Iraq today. This was a—
Wait, you mean the Secretary of State, Jared Kushner?
Oh, yeah, that one, that person who isn't the Secretary of State. So this was a surprise trip. What do you think he's doing?
Well, I mean, there's a guy named Rex Tillerson, and I had to look up to see who he was. It says he's Secretary of State.
And where is he today?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. He's probably hiding somewhere. The point is that he's not in Iraq with Jared Kushner and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Somebody, allegedly the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, perhaps President Trump, but said that Kushner should be in Iraq talking to the Iraqis about peace deals. They're always talking about him. He's going to meet with the Chinese. He's going to meet with Middle East leaders. It's remarkable. Well, look, Donald Trump is a loyalist to a fault. He trusts probably nobody closer than his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Kushner's wife, his daughter, Ivanka Trump. So yes,
and
he has a
way,
cabinet.
And by the way, let's pause right there, because she confirmed over the weekend that she will now be filing her own Form 278. This means that she is bound by ethics, but it also means that she is going to now have an unpaid White House job, but still a formal White House job.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's paid or not. First of all, she's not looking for the money. But the point is, once upon a time, these kind of things were questionably about ethics. Remember in 1967, the Senate passed the anti-nepotism law.
No, I don't remember that, but yes, okay.
It was a response to President Kennedy nominating his brother, picking his brother,
right.
Bobby Kennedy, for Attorney General. The Senate passed that law in 67. The point is, ethics experts are saying there are so many questions, mostly financial, regarding whatever Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump are doing, that while a lot of it has to do with diplomacy, a lot of it has to do with their business too. The Kushner and Ivanka Trump have not completely separated themselves from Trump Industries and Trump International and Trump. And so a lot of people say, wait a second, there's got to be some questions about this. There are questions, and the question is whether anything could be done about it.
Rex Tillerson might be in Washington, D.C. because the Egyptian president is visiting, and that's making news. It is his first official visit to the White House. And apparently there's a relationship that has already begun between the Egyptian president and the United States president.
That's true. And, you know, of course, obviously, given the coup against the Muslim Brotherhood and the democratically elected head of Egypt several years ago, it's a controversial visit. But look, Trump has his way of alienating many U.S. allies. We've seen that with Britain, with Australia, with other countries, Mexico. So, but this seems to be a relationship that's on stronger footing.
Well, you have forecast that there will be eventually a serious confrontation between President Trump and the state of California. You probably saw that the president approved disaster relief funds over the weekend. $540 million, half of that is going to the repair of our spillways. I know you know about the Oroville crisis this spring, but at least that funding seems to be in motion as it's needed.
Yeah, I would. If I was the state of California, I would cash that check immediately.
One more question then I have for you, Ken. You get to pick Gonzaga or North Carolina. Who's it going to be tonight?
I'm rooting for Gonzaga. I love the fact that somebody who has a team that hasn't been in the championship forever, and I think they match up well against North Carolina. I'm not predicting. I still predict that Hillary Clinton will win in 2016, so I've been wrong on everything else. I'll just say I'm hoping for a great game.
All right. We'll check up on you next week. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Beth.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. You can find a link to his website at capradio.org/insight. You are listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio.
And it must be Monday if it's Ken Rudin, the political junkie, on with Cap Radio's Beth Ruyak on Insight. Good morning. I'm Steve Milne with Marnette Fedaris. And if you love the political junkie, if you love that energy, the humor, and of course the, you know, the political, really the encyclopedic knowledge of the politics that, that Ken Rudin has, then call and support it with a contribution. It's our fund drive this week, and every contribution goes a long way to supporting the programming that you've come to expect and that you have come to kind of rely on. Cap Radio is depending on you today to help support it with a contribution. And the number to call is 1-800-800-5867.
And because it is Monday morning, you might still be getting ready to get your week started. And one way to get your week going is by giving today to Cap Radio. Be like Danielle, who gave today this morning from Davis, California, or Raymond from Vacaville. Get your week going. Another reason, smart reason, to donate now is that it puts you in the running for a $500 gift card with Southwest Airlines. All you have to do is call now or donate online and you're set. Plus, you'll feel good about donating to Cap Radio. So that number again is 1-800-800-5867 or go to capradio.org.
Yeah, it only takes a few moments, and you'll be doing a lot to ensure that the programming that you depend on is there for you with politics like with Ken Rudin and with what's going on at the state capitol or arts and entertainment, that kind of thing that you have come to rely on from Cap Radio. And the shows on Cap Radio value open minds and multiple perspectives. That combo makes for a better understanding of an issue. If you become a more informed citizen because of folks like Ken Rudin, then please contribute now and support it. 1-800-800-5867 or safely and securely at our website, capradio.org.
And once you give, consider giving a monthly evergreen gift or of $19 or more. It's the perfect once you get a $19 gift, you'll be able to choose a new Cap Radio flip-flops that's up for grabs for this drive. It's the perfect gear for the summer. If you're, planning on going to the beach or the river, you'll have that perfect gear for the summer. There's recess soles that leaves the Cap Radio logo in the sand so you can let everybody know that you're a Cap Radio listener. It's red, black, and comfy. That's when you give $19 a month, a monthly evergreen gift. That's 1-800-800-5867 or go to capradio.org.
Yeah, those flip-flops are pretty cool. One way to show your support and the one way we kind of say thank you to you when you support Cap Radio and Insight. So please do it now. Go to our website, capradio.org, or give us a phone call toll-free 1-800-800-5867. And thank you.